As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
AITA for being slapped in public, being called cheap, and finding out that I'm not the father? I'm 28. She was 26. We met at a buddy's housewarming. Super low-key. Think Costco pizzas on the counter. A Spotify playlist doing its best to drown out a dripping faucet in the kitchen. She was over there, trying to wrestle open a fancy bottled water with her sweatshirt sleeve. Don't ask. I just handed her a bottle opener. No words. She looked up, laughed, called me Mr. Prepared, and just like that, we were talking like we'd known each other for years. I honestly don't remember who else was even there. It was like the whole room went blurry, and it was just us. That kind of instant connection you don't even bother trying to explain to your friends later, because they'd just give you that look. We started dating pretty quick. First date rolled into breakfast the next morning. Soon, sleepovers at her place, or mine, started feeling less like visits and more like, well, not quite home, but comfortable. Spontaneous weekend trips to a lake town a few hours away. 2 a.m. walks through quiet suburban streets, talking about hypotheticals like, if you were an animal, what would you be? She said a cat, because they don't take orders. I said a turtle. I like my own space, moving at my own pace, not being rushed. She laughed. Figures. She had this crazy energy, everything dialed up to 10. Told stories with her whole body. Talked a mile a minute. Laughed louder than anyone else. Made even boring errands feel like an event. A trip to Target? She'd invent elaborate, ridiculous backstories for people we saw in the parking lot. Not gonna lie, I dug it. Made the world feel a little lighter. Me, I'm a planner. Always have been. Grew up in a house where money was tight. There was no safety net. You messed up, you went without. Simple. So yeah, I budget. I don't spend just to spend. I think about tomorrow because I've seen how fast today can go south. Still, I tried to make space for her vibe. She loved fancy sushi spots. We went. I took her to some indie band sold-out show, 3 hours standing shoulder to shoulder, music I didn't even like. But she was jumping, singing, absolutely glowing. Worth it. She told me once I made her feel safe, that I was solid, someone she could count on, that I'd keep us from going completely off the rails. I remember she got this nasty flu, the kind that glues you to the bed. I called out of my job. I'm a project manager, pretty flexible, made her chicken noodle soup from scratch, kept her water bottle full. She looked at me, all feverish and dazed, and said, "No one's ever made me feel this safe." Kissed my forehead like I was the sick one. That stuck with me. I like being that kind of guy. But over time, the differences weren't so cute anymore. She loved to spend, had this attitude like money would just magically appear. I believed you don't spend what you don't have, or at least have a plan for. She shopped like it was an Olympic sport, Sephora hauls, random home decor from Urban Outfitters, clothes she'd wear once for an Instagram post. "You only live once," she'd say. "Yeah, but rent's due next month, every month." For a while, I bit my tongue, figured we'd find a middle ground. Then the little dig started. Comments about my apartment. I've got a small but clean studio in a decent, older building. My car's paid off, a reliable Honda. No debt. Not flashy, but it works for me. We'd walk past some new luxury high-rise downtown, and she'd sigh. Imagine living there instead of your shoebox. Always with a laugh, but it stung. Or we'd be at a boutique, I'd pass on something, and she'd say, "Must be nice not to worry about money if you never actually spend any of it." Again, half joking, but it chipped away. It wasn't about the sushi or the shopping sprees. It was how she made saving sound like a character flaw, like I was less of a man for not wanting to flex a lifestyle I hadn't actually earned yet. I kept thinking, this isn't about being cheap. It's about fundamentally different ways of seeing the world. I planned for the future. She lived for the now. I wanted to build a life. She wanted to live it like a movie montage. Still, I was all in. Didn't want to change her. Just wanted her to get why I am the way I am. I've been in situations where I had to choose between putting gas in my car to get to work or buying groceries for the week. I wasn't going back there, and I didn't want us to end up there. But trying to explain that? Like talking to a wall. She'd look at me like I was actively trying to ruin her fun. "We never do anything fun anymore," she'd complain. Even though we still went out, just maybe not to the trendiest new cocktail bar every single weekend. I started to wonder if I was the problem. Too cautious? Too serious for a 28-year-old? But then I'd look at what I'd built, my steady job, my savings, my lack of debt, and remember why I did it. It wasn't so we couldn't live. It was to make sure we had a good life, long term. The more I tried to explain, the more she saw it as me not wanting her to be happy, like I was deliberately holding her back. That hurt, because I felt like I was giving everything to build something solid for both of us. But she just didn't see it that way. She thought I was scared. I thought I was being smart. That's when things really started to fray. A little after our 2-year anniversary, she started dropping hints about next steps. Nothing major at first. Should we do a gallery wall like that when we get a place together? Or wouldn't it be cute to get a Frenchie and dress him in little sweaters? Harmless, right? And it's not like I was against it. I actually liked that she saw a future with me. But I also knew her spending habits versus my saving habits, and how ugly that math looked on a spreadsheet. Then she found this apartment on TikTok. I should have known it was trouble the second she showed me the video. Place looked like it was straight out of Architectural Digest. Marble countertops, rooftop pool with cabanas, floor-to-ceiling windows with that perfect influencer glow lighting. The rent was nearly double what she was paying for her current place with a roommate, and way more than I was comfortable with. "Can you imagine us here?" she breathed, eyes shining. "Sure, someday," I said. "But right now, that would financially cripple us." She made a face like I'd just suggested we live in a cardboard box under an overpass. Then she laughed, that dismissive little laugh. "You treat money like it's some ancient relic that needs to be preserved in a museum. Not everything needs a spreadsheet, you know." I didn't say it, but I thought, "No, just the things that can ruin your future if you screw them up." That's when it hit me. We didn't just live differently. We believed in fundamentally different things. So, I made a practical suggestion. "If your lease is up soon, why don't you move into my studio for a bit? We can save a ton, figure out what we really want long term. It makes sense." That went over like a lead balloon. "Your place looks like a college dorm room," she said. "You own, like, one bath towel, and your cereal boxes live on top of the fridge." I blinked. First, it's a perfectly good towel. Second, the cereal thing was efficient. But I kept my cool. "It's not about how it looks right now. It's about what it allows us to build." "Yeah, well, I want a life that feels like something," she retorted. "Not like I'm just waiting for it to start." That was the first time she really belittled my life, like everything I'd worked for was worthless because it wasn't flashy. And yeah, that stung. Then came the little jabs. "Because everything with you is a budget line item. Or, you act like you're 50, not 28. Once she said, "I feel like I have to fill out a loan application just to suggest a date night." I never told her not to spend her money. I just didn't want to build a shared life where we were constantly playing catch up, always one unexpected bill away from disaster. I wanted us, for once, to feel like we were ahead of the game. But it became clear she just saw me as scared, as unwilling to move forward, using practicality as an excuse to avoid real commitment. That wasn't it at all. I was trying to build something real. I just didn't want it to cost me every single thing I'd already achieved. If that made me the bad guy in her story, so be it. One night, we were eating takeout Thai on my couch. She dropped it. "If we're not going to move in together soon, like a real place, then what are we even doing?" I told her, "We're building. Slowly. Carefully." "I thought so," she said, rolling her eyes. "Building what? A future that never gets here." I looked at her, trying to keep my voice even. "Living like there's no tomorrow doesn't work for me. I've worked too damn hard to get where I am. I'm not throwing that away for rent I can't realistically afford and a designer couch I don't need." She was quiet for a beat. Then, "You act like I'm irresponsible. Do you seriously think I'm some reckless kid?" "No," I said. "I just think we have different priorities. That's not a crime. It just means maybe we're not as compatible as we thought." And then she said it. "Maybe you're just afraid of commitment. Maybe you hide behind your stupid budgets because you're terrified to actually build a life with someone." It felt like a low blow, like she wasn't even trying to understand where I was coming from. So she just twisted it into something ugly. I just sat there. "I'm not afraid of commitment," I finally said. I'm afraid of being stuck in something that's fundamentally wrong for both of us. She scoffed, laughed like I was some pathetic loser who couldn't handle a woman with vision. Then she told me I'd regret losing someone like her. I told her I didn't want to lose her, but I didn't want to lose myself either. If we keep forcing this, we're both going to end up bitter and exhausted. And I'd rather remember you fondly than end up resenting you. She didn't answer. Just got up, grabbed her purse, and walked to the door. No, let's talk later. Nothing. That was it. She paused at the door, looked back at me for a long second. Are you going to regret this? Maybe, I said. But I'd rather regret being cautious now than regret being trapped later. She left without another word. And that was that. So, after she walked out, I just sort of existed for a while. You know that weird limbo where your brain knows it's over, but your body hasn't gotten the memo. That was me. Still waking up half expecting a good morning text, still seeing a dumb meme and thinking, she'd find this hilarious. Muscle memory. A few weeks went by. I was getting back into my routine, doing okay, not great, but better. Then my buddy, James, texts, few of us are grabbing burgers at that old dive bar near campus, the Gilded Griddle. You in? Super chill. Greasy burgers, booths with names carved into them, a real-time capsule. So I went. Sat down with the guys, just shooting the breeze, felt like old times. Then James subtly nudges me and nods towards the bar. Yep, it was her. Same girl, different vibe, tiny black dress, like she was trying to out-actress everyone in the joint, hair perfect, huge, practice smile. She was laughing way too loud with some dude who looked like he'd stepped out of a How to Look Rich on a Budget catalog. I glanced over, quick, polite. How could you not? But then I just gave a small nod and turned back to my friends. I wasn't going to pretend I didn't see her, but I wasn't about to play whatever game she was starting. But she wasn't done. Oh no. Every few minutes, I'd feel her eyes on me. You know that prickle on your neck? But I gave her nothing. Stayed in the moment with my friends. Honestly, I was kind of proud of myself. And then it happened. Right as my eyes flicked her way, she leaned into the catalog guy and laid one on him. Not a peck. A full-on, hands on his face, trying to win an Oscar kiss. Then she turned and stared right at me, like she was waiting for me to shatter. I didn't. Just raised my beer glass in a mock toast and went back to the conversation. My friend Mark kind of snorted. Dude, that was so for you. I shrugged. If it was, not my circus, not my monkeys. I figured that was the end of it. She had her moment, proved her point, whatever. We finished eating, paid the bill, and headed out. Just as we were on the sidewalk, heading for the parking lot, she materialized. Out of nowhere. One second I'm laughing at something James said, the next she's right in my face. She slapped me. Hard. Full palm. The whole sidewalk went quiet. Then she shoved me in the chest, hard enough to make me stumble back. You have a heart of stone, she yelled. You should have fought for me. I was the best thing that ever happened to you. I didn't say anything at first, just stood there blinking. Not because the slap shocked me. Though, yeah, it did, but because this was a person I used to hold when she had nightmares. And here she was, trying to humiliate me like I was the villain in her personal soap opera. My friends were stunned. One of them muttered, "What the hell?" I looked at her, kept my voice level. "Stop making a fool of yourself." That seemed to hurt her more than the slap hurt me. You could see it. She wasn't expecting calm. She wanted chaos, a scene, tears, yelling, maybe me begging. She wanted to prove she could break me, and the second I didn't, she lost it. I turned to my friends. "Let's go." We walked away. She didn't follow, just stood there, staring at my back like she couldn't believe I wasn't chasing her. That night, lying in bed, staring at the ceiling, I replayed it. Not because I missed her, not anymore. It hurt in a different way. Not love pain, more like, how did we even get here? We were supposed to be better than this. Or maybe that was the problem. Maybe we never really were. I typed out a text. "You didn't have to do that." Stared at it for 10 minutes. Deleted it. I wasn't going to be her audience. Not this time. 2 days later, like clockwork, she broke the silence. A text. Just a picture of us from months ago, her wearing my college hoodie, head on my shoulder. Caption: "No one's ever going to get you like I did. Good luck faking it with whoever comes next." Classic. This time, I didn't hesitate. Keep it. I'm not faking anything. I'm healing. And I'm not wasting another second letting someone, especially you, mess with my peace. Delivered. No reply. that text wasn't about closure for her. It was about control. The second I didn't give her the reaction she craved, she had nothing left to say. Honestly, I thought that was the grand finale of the crazy. Went home that night thinking, okay, that was the last dramatic act. Time for the dust to settle. I muted her on all social media, out of sight, out of mind. And for a bit, it worked. No texts, no calls. Figured she'd either given up or realized the show was over. Then Sunday happened. It was a little after 7:40 in the morning. I was brushing my teeth, half asleep, when I heard banging on my apartment door. Not knocking. Banging, like someone was trying to kick it in. I already knew. Looked through the peephole. There she was, still in that little black dress from the bar, mascara streaks down her face like war paint. I opened the door, but only enough to stand in the frame, blocking her. She tried to push past, but I didn't budge. She looked at me like she expected me to just crumble at the sight of her. "You really don't care, huh?" she said, voice raspy. I didn't answer right away. Not because I didn't care, past tense, but because I knew what this was, bait. She wanted me angry, wanted to drag me back into that emotional tornado she thrived in. I wasn't playing. She kept going. "You didn't even react last night. I kissed someone else right in front of your face, screamed at you in the middle of the street, and you just walked away like I was nothing." "I didn't walk away because you were nothing," I told her, keeping my voice even. "I walked away because you made it pretty damn clear there was nothing left to talk about." Wrong answer, apparently. She started crying harder. "You're heartless. You're cold. I wanted you to fight for me. I wanted you to care enough to stop me, and you just stood there." I kept my cool. "So, let me get this straight. Your master plan was to kiss another guy, slap me in public, and then wait to see if I'd beg you to come back." She looked flustered for a second, then shoved my chest again, weakly this time. "Don't twist it. You always twist everything. You don't understand what it feels like to be unwanted." That was rich, coming from someone who'd emotionally checked out for the last month of our relationship. "You made your choice," I said, "and I accepted it. That doesn't mean I didn't care. It just means I understood there was no point pouring gasoline on a fire we both knew was already burning out." She was silent for a moment. I thought, hoped, she was going to leave. Then she whispered, "Do you still love me?" I didn't answer. "Do you miss me?" "Nothing. Was I nothing to you?" I looked her straight in the eye. It was real. I loved you. Maybe a part of me still does. But love doesn't mean a damn thing if you're constantly fighting the person you're supposed to be building something with. Her expression changed. Not sadness anymore. Something colder, meaner. She turned without a word and walked down the front steps of my building. I thought that was it. 15 minutes later, I heard a loud thud outside. Went to my front window. She was in the driveway, by my car. She was throwing something at it. At first, I thought it was her purse. Nope. One of her high heels. Then she went to my side mirror and started yanking on it, like she thought it would just pop off. When it didn't, she reached into her purse, pulled out something, keys, I realized, and keyed the entire passenger side of my car, screaming wordlessly, just screaming. I didn't go out. I pulled out my phone and recorded it from the window. Every second. Part of me wanted to storm out there, yell, "Look at yourself. This is what you've become." But I already knew. If I opened that door, it wouldn't end with words. It would end with her twisted logic and fake tears, and somehow, again, I'd be the villain. You learn pretty fast that staying calm isn't weakness, it's strategy. She had the chaos, I had the evidence. Then I called the cops. A few minutes later, she left in a Lyft like nothing happened. By noon that day, I'd filed a police report and handed over the video. They processed it quickly. In less than a week, I had a temporary restraining order. She couldn't come within 100 yards of me or my property. I didn't want it to come to that. I really didn't. But I wasn't going to let someone vandalize my property just because I didn't fall apart on her cue. It was all surreal. Not because I didn't almost expect it, but because it felt like watching a stranger completely unravel. This was someone I used to make breakfast for, someone I thought I might build a life with. Now she was out there, keying my car like a scene from a bad teen movie. I didn't talk about it. When friends asked how the relationship ended, I just said, "It got ugly. It's over now." That was enough. I spent the next few days focusing on normal, work, gym, laundry, cleaning out my fridge. But that weird hum was still there, that feeling like I'd dodged something way worse than just a broken heart. And I was right. Because a few days later, I found an envelope on my car windshield, and that opened up a whole new level of crazy. It was Wednesday. I'd stayed late at work. Quarterly reports, you know the drill. Left around 6:30 p.m., sun was starting to set. My car was on the top level of the parking garage, my usual spot. I was halfway to it when I noticed something tucked under the windshield wiper. Another damn flyer? Some stupid prank. But then I saw my name, handwritten, in that big, dramatic script she always used when she left cutesy notes around her apartment. I looked around. Nothing. No one nearby. I stood there for a solid minute, envelope in hand, debating whether to even open it. Probably should have just tossed it. I had the TRO. Any further contact could be reported. It felt like another power play. I slid my finger under the flap, pulled out a folded piece of paper. Not long, just a few lines in her familiar handwriting. "This is yours. You walked away from both of us. Thought you should know." Taped to the bottom of the note was what looked like an ultrasound picture. I just stood there, staring at it, my brain trying to catch up. The date printed in the corner of the ultrasound was from 2 weeks ago. I sat down in the driver's seat, envelope still in hand, like my processor was overloaded. It didn't add up. We'd been broken up for about 2 months, hadn't slept together for weeks even before that. The math was definitely not on our side. Things were already super weird and strained by the time of our last encounter. Still, I wasn't going to assume anything. I don't do drama. I handle things with clarity and calm. So, I texted her, got the envelope. "Is this real?" She replied an hour later. "Just, yes." I stared at that one-word text for a long time. Then I wrote back, "If this is legitimate, I will absolutely be responsible. But we both know the dates don't line up. So, unless there's something you want to clarify, don't contact me again. If the numbers don't match, I'm not committing to a life I didn't help create." Her reply was quicker this time. "You're unbelievable. Always needing control. Always needing proof. Just admit you're scared and you're not even pretending to be a good man anymore." I didn't respond. Instead, the next morning, I did what I knew was right. I made an appointment with a family law attorney. Told him everything. The breakup, the car, the TRO, the envelope. Handed over the note, the picture, the texts. Laid it all out. They were great. Guided me clearly. The note and ultrasound didn't count as legal notification of paternity. She had violated the restraining order by leaving anything on my property, even if it wasn't overtly threatening. And until a legal paternity test was done, I had zero obligation to respond to her claim or assume any responsibility. And most importantly, I was to have no further direct contact with her. So, I didn't. That same day, I filed another police report, adding the envelope to the documentation of TRO violations. I wasn't trying to punish her. I just wanted peace. I just wanted the games to end. I thought maybe she'd get the hint and stop. But no. 2 days later, a mutual friend, Sarah, sent me a screenshot of her Instagram story. She didn't tag me, didn't use my name, but it was obvious. Some men walk away as soon as things get real. I don't need someone who can't stand by me when life gets tough. Hashtag single mom strong, hashtag my journey. The comments were full of vague support. "You're so brave. Your baby is lucky to have you. Some people don't deserve to be parents." Another mutual acquaintance unfollowed me. One more sent me a DM. "Dude, I don't know what you did, but she's devastated. Maybe reach out." I didn't reply to any of it. I had no energy to defend myself against filtered phrases and public posturing. Didn't post a rebuttal. Just saved everything. Screenshots, dates, times. Because at that point, it wasn't about pride. It was about not letting someone rewrite history just because they couldn't control the narrative anymore. A week later, I got a call from her number. Let it go to voicemail. Didn't check it right away. I was at work, had actual responsibilities. When I finally listened to it that night, it was exactly what I expected. "I can't believe you're pretending this isn't happening. You don't even have the decency to talk to me directly. What kind of man hides behind lawyers when there's a child involved? You're acting like a coward. And I hope your future child never has to know someone as cold as you." That voicemail also got added to the case file. Because yes, leaving a voicemail counts as contact, and with an active TRO, that's a violation, no matter the tone, no matter if she was talking about feelings. If you're legally ordered to stay 100 yards away and not contact someone, you don't get to find loopholes with phone calls. My lawyer made it clear, document everything, let the court handle it. And I did. Every time she posted something clearly, if indirectly, aimed at me, I screenshotted it. When a friend of hers texted me, "She's just scared, man. Maybe you should at least hear her out," I didn't reply. And then, for 2 weeks, radio silence. I thought either she'd finally realized she was out of moves, or someone with a lick of sense finally told her to cool it. I got back to my normal routine: work, gym, weekend errands. I even went for a run in the park one Sunday, like I used to before everything got so damn intense. Then I got served with court papers. She'd filed a petition to establish paternity in family court. If you've never been through it, it's basically a legal request for the court to officially determine who a child's father is, and from there, decide custody, support, all that stuff. The funny thing is, I wasn't angry, because this was exactly what I'd wanted from the start, a clear, legal process. I called my lawyer that same day. He said, "Perfect. Now we get the test and move forward." The hearing date was set. She showed up in a white blouse, looking demure, like she expected to be congratulated for bravely bringing the truth to light. I wore clean jeans, a button-down shirt, said nothing beyond what the judge asked. We both agreed to the DNA test. I didn't rush to open the results when they came. I already knew, deep down, what they'd say. 0% probability of paternity. My lawyer filed a motion to dismiss her paternity petition and to enforce the no-contact terms of the restraining order more strictly. The judge signed off on both. To the court, I was free. But she wasn't quite done. 3 days later, I came home from work, and she was sitting on the steps of my apartment building. I should have called the cops, should have just walked away and called my lawyer. But a part of me, a tired, weary part, just wanted to know what she thought she was going to say now. She stood up when she saw me, eyes already red-rimmed. "You were right," she said, voice thick, barely holding it together. "I was wrong," I thought. "I really thought he was yours." I didn't say anything. Just stood there, keys in my hand. She continued, words tumbling out. "I didn't mean to lie. I was just confused. Everything got so chaotic, and I didn't know who else. And when you didn't fight for me, I panicked. Still, I stayed silent." The timing," she stammered. "I should have been honest with you from the start, about other things. But I didn't know how. I was scared." That was her go-to line. Always scared, always confused, always someone else's fault for not reading her mind or managing her emotions for her. I finally spoke. "You weren't confused. You just didn't want to admit you'd lost control of the narrative. You slept with someone else while we were, technically, still together, or at least in that gray area. You knew the child might not be mine, but you decided it was easier to paint me as the villain than to take responsibility for your own actions. You wanted someone stable to lean on. Someone you could guilt-trip into staying or supporting you. You didn't get that. So now you're here, trying again." She didn't deny it. "Just look down at the cracked sidewalk. You came looking for me like I owed you something," I added, my voice flat. "After everything, the slap, the car, the fake story you spun on social media, you still thought I'd just be here waiting? I didn't think it would end like this," she whispered, her voice cracking. I nodded slowly. "Right. You thought I'd cave. Like you thought I always would." I walked past her and unlocked the main door to the building. Before I went in, I turned back one last time. "You're not a bad person, deep down, I don't think. But you're incredibly selfish. You treat people like they're characters in your own personal drama, and then you act surprised when they don't follow your script. You always said I was cold, but all I was ever doing was trying to stay calm while you turned every disagreement into a three-act play." She looked like she was about to completely break down, maybe even try to throw herself into my arms for a hug I wouldn't return. But I didn't move. There was a time I would have, reflexively, held her, told her it's okay, even when it clearly wasn't. But that guy? He doesn't exist anymore. The one who confused loyalty with self-sacrifice, who let empathy be weaponized against him. Not because I didn't care, once upon a time, but because loving someone doesn't mean you have to stay tethered to their chaos, especially when they treat you like an expendable option. She lost me long before this final, pathetic scene. She just didn't realize it until I stopped running back into the fire she kept setting. You don't get to burn someone's life down and then cry when they walk away from the ashes. You don't get to hurl chaos at someone and then expect to be thanked for the intensity. I didn't do you wrong. I just stopped playing your game. And with that, I went inside and closed the door behind me. I didn't look back. About 3 months later, Sarah, that mutual friend, told me she'd had the baby. No father listed on the birth certificate, no partner in sight. Turns out the catalog guy from the bar, the one she kissed so dramatically in front of me, he didn't even know she was pregnant. She never told him. maybe because even she wasn't sure he was the father. Apparently, it was a one-night stand, they never saw each other again. Now she's a single mom, still posting those vague quotes about strength and resilience and overcoming betrayal, trying to make the world believe she was wronged by some cold, heartless man who wouldn't fight for her. I don't hate her. I really don't. But I don't feel sorry for her either. Because there comes a point where you stop being the victim of your circumstances and start being responsible for the mess you've made. She lost someone who genuinely cared, someone who would have been a good partner if she'd let him. Her tears, back on my steps that day, they weren't for what we had. They were for the control she'd finally, irrevocably lost. I still live in the same studio. I'm moving on, slowly but surely. Keep my days busy. Structure helps. Haven't dated anyone else yet. Not because I'm bitter, but because I'm done. I'm not settling for chaos disguised as charm ever again. If there's one thing I've learned from all this, it's this. You can love someone, you can miss the good times you once had with someone, and still be absolutely, unequivocally right to walk away. Some people will call that being cold. I call it finally choosing peace. If you liked it, don't forget to leave a comment and support the channel by subscribing. See you in the upcoming stories.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy. Just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
Indulge in all your holiday faves this season, knowing you're getting the good stuff your body craves with Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake. It's your post-holiday recovery kit with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. And it actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you can even savor the season with their limited edition chocolate mint. There are endless ways to personalize your cachava, whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee. With every 2 scoops of cachava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com and use code NEWS.